Okay, so let's start in chapter 3, verse 18, and I'll read through 4-6. Wives, submit to your husbands, as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives, and do not be harsh with them. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. Bondservants, obey in everything those who are your earthly masters, not by way of eye service as people pleasers, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, work heartily, as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ. For the wrongdoer will be paid back for the wrong he has done, and there is no partiality. Masters, treat your bondservants justly and fairly, knowing that you also have a master in heaven. Continue steadfastly in prayer, being watchful in it with thanksgiving. At the same time, pray also for us that God may open to us a door for the word, to declare the mystery of Christ on account of which I am in prison, that I may make it clear, which is how I ought to speak. Walk in wisdom towards outsiders, making the best use of the time, and let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how you ought to answer each person. And so, as we already mentioned, in this passage, Paul is addressing the members of the household, like all of them, actually, you know, wives, husbands, children, fathers. And so he is demonstrating here how the redemptive work of Christ redefines these familial relationships, and how having Christ in our lives and having Christ as a redeemer kind of transforms these relationships. And so, I don't think I have to tell y'all, but as we talk about all sorts of different domestic roles and gender differences here, slaves and masters, like we all know that in Christ, all people are equal, right? We know that. And in essence and in value. And in Christ, all these factors that used to discriminate have been eradicated. And so I don't think I have to tell y'all that, but I do want to mention that, especially since we're about to talk about bondservants and masters and things like that. So, but in this passage, Paul is showing us how we should affirm these timeless biblical distinctions while also affirming the worth of every individual member. So there are, of course, distinctions between wives and husbands, but there is value to both of those roles. Husband or fathers are different than children, but there's value, of course, in both of those roles. And so we see kind of three different pairs of relationships here. We see wives and husbands, children and fathers, and then slaves and masters. And in both of those, there's kind of this, like we've already talked about, there's like an intention to operate in submission for somebody into somebody else in a role. But ultimately, the Christian household is intended to operate in submission to the ultimate lordship of Jesus. And so everybody in the house is submitting to the lordship of Jesus. And so this was kind of, this kind of helped reorient the Colossians to this structure of supreme leadership of Christ, and kind of helped point them that way. And it's kind of been this theme throughout the entire letter. We talked about this a little bit, but how Jesus is Lord over everything. And so that's, again, just being reiterated here. And so, but in this passage, God kind of provides a blueprint, and he gives us the necessary steps to build a home according to his plan. So what does that look like? We all know that back in Genesis, when sin entered the world, that family unit was destroyed, right? There was immediately like a brokenness between husbands and wives, and there was that animosity between them. And that relationship became strained, and it's existed ever since then. And that's why we were sitting in this room asking, what does it mean to submit? Like, what does that even mean? And it's why we're all like a little uneasy about the word. I don't think that that's our culture. I think that that's been since Adam and Eve were in the garden. Because, you know, Eve said it was the snake, and then Adam said it was the wife. And so everybody was pointing to everybody else, and relationships became strained. But Because of Jesus, God has provided this way for our homes to be redeemed and for this good original design to be restored. And so we have to offer our homes in submission to God's authority. So everybody in the home, from the husband to the father, or the husband to the wife, to the father, to the children, to the mother, to the bondservant, everybody has to recognize that Christ is the ultimate leader of the home and be in submission to his authority. And so submitting to that leadership in our homes means that we recognize that our roles are from the Lord, right? That God has ordered these roles that we exist in, and that they were established as part of God's original design for the family, and they should be honored and celebrated. Like, they're different, and that's a good thing. And so all of these roles are distinct from one another, but the individual members that have roles have equal value in God's eyes. They're all equal. And every single function, even though it's different, and even though it looks different, is vital to God's design for the household. And so each individual person has to submit to that leadership, not only to another individual, a wife to a husband, a child to a father, but all of them must submit to the Lord's authority. And so in order for Christ to be the Lord of our homes, he has to first be Lord of our hearts, right? And so we have to serve with his love. And so each member of the household, as we've kind of read in these passages, each member of the household is kind of adopting a servant's heart of devotion and submission to another. And so submitting to Christ's leadership and serving through his love helps us to reflect God's blueprint for what a house looks like. And so I think if everybody that is in submission, that if everybody that has a role where somebody is submitting to them or is supposed to obey them also remembers, and this is for the father, the husband, also remembers that they are submitting to the authority of Jesus, that helps everything go a lot smoother, right?
Because the Lord can't tell one person to do it, but another person to do it.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So, in here, so let's take a look really quick at these various members of the household and how kind of things are divided. So wives and husbands, it says wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting to the Lord. So wives should respectfully lift up their husbands. I've said all this before a minute ago when I cheated and read some of my notes, but the household instructions in these verses begins with wives who are called to submit to their husbands. We've already talked about how that word submit can be misconstrued, misunderstood. But submit is used in the New Testament to reference a wife's responsibility to her husband. And so husbands are intended to be faithful caretakers of their wives, right? And then wives are kind of that loving complement to their husband. Not that they take the back seat. Not that they don't, like you said, like use their gifts and their talents. But to be compliments. And so this word here, submit, is not the same word as obey that Paul uses for children and slaves. And it's not a term that lessens the worth of the wife by any means, because we know that wives are equal image bearers and co-heirs with Christ. But it describes a sort of a voluntary offering of oneself to another in willing support. And I think I said this too, but it reflects the heart of Christ himself, who, though he was equal and willing, but he subjected himself to the Father and to the Father's will. And so I think practically speaking, it means that wives should offer themselves to their husbands with heartfelt respect, which we talked about, and admiration. And I don't mean admiration like googly eyes all the time, even though that is what it looks like sometimes, and it should. But a wife's dignity and devotion to her husband are ultimately expressions of her love for Christ and should be offered as that which is fitting to the Lord. So I have a much easier time loving my husband when I remember that as I love my husband, I'm also loving Christ. And so that's also helpful for me. But let's talk about the husbands. And I read this to Matt when I was studying. I was like, what do you think about this? And he was like, I like that. Husbands should sacrificially love their wives. Verse 19, husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. And I have to remind Matt all the time, I'm like, you're being harsh with me. Stop being harsh with me. Don't raise your voice at me. He's like, I'm not raising my voice at you. I'm just louder than you are. I'm very adverse to being yelled at. That's why I didn't play sports in college or in high school. Husbands are responsible. This is what I read to Matt. I was like, what do you think about that? And he was like, I like that. Husbands are responsible for the emotional, physical, and spiritual needs of their wives. And I like that because I have a lot of needs. I have a lot of needs that need to be met in all three of those categories. And Matt really does, like, he really does, like, it's his favorite thing for me to need him for something. Like, for me to have a need and say, like, Matt, I need this. Like, it is his, it's his favorite thing to be able to do something to take care of something that I need. And so husbands are to be devoted to care for their wives and also promote their sanctification. Like, they're to lead us in our sanctification. And they do that by embodying Christ's example, who Christ nurtured the church. And so husbands are also to embody this example that Christ has. It's just as Christ nurtured his church, our husbands are supposed to also aid in our sanctification. And just as our love for our husbands is also a reflection of our love for Christ, a husband's love for his wife derives from his love for Jesus. And so a husband's love for his bride should reflect the sacrificial and unconditional love of his Savior in such a way that it stimulates a deeper affection for Jesus in her heart. And I think that's, like, such a beautiful picture. And so, like, as we talk about all those things about husbands and wives here, none of that seems, like, harsh to me. That sounds, like, fun to me. Like, husbands meet my needs? Yes, I love that. I love you like I love Christ? Yes, I love that. And so I think it's supposed to be, like, a beautiful whole picture instead of, like, something that we're, you know, afraid of or something that seems scary to us. But then also, not only husbands, there's direction for children here. And it's in verse 20, children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Children should humbly listen to their parents. I think this is the hardest one out of all of it. I can submit all day long. I think Matt can love me all day long. But having my children do something is totally different. So this verse, of course, because we're talking about children, is directed to those who are young and continue to live under the supervision and provision of their parents. And so, just like I've said, the obey word here is a much stronger word than submit. Mm-hmm. And so, children have this deep, unqualified responsibility to comply with the instructions of their parents and the guidance of their parents. And so, like I said, that's a lot easier said than done. And it's a lot easier to say that that's what my children do than it is what is they actually do, you know? So, but I think we talked about this too. This doesn't require children to obey things that are unbiblical or immoral or illegal or things like that. But it does put an expectation on them to be in willing submission and obedience to their parents. And it respects the leadership of their parents, the role that their parents have. I think I got this from Kylie. And I feel like there's three things that her kids are a little bit older than mine. So when they were little, she and Woody would constantly, like, hammer home with them what obedience is. Obedience is instant. It's, am I hard to say this?
Like, right away with a happy heart.
Yes, instant, right away with a happy heart. It's like,
I've told my kids that today. Right away with a happy heart.
Yes. So, like, my kids are real bad at, like, Ford, do this. Yes, ma'am. I just got to do this first. I'm like, it's not obedience. Obedience is yes, ma'am. And you in there and you do that now. You know? And like when they were little, of course it was hard to reason with them, but when they were little, it was like you wanted to be able to say, Ford, stop. Mm-hmm. and him stop. Why? Because if we're at the edge of a street and I say, Ford, stop, I want you to stop so that you don't run out and get run over by a car and get killed, right? And so we're still like working on this. Like, what does obedience look like? It's not just doing it, but it's in how you do it and when you do it, right? You know? And so we're still working on that, and we're still kind of living in that like inverted pyramid kind of thing where you don't give them a lot of leash and you give them more leash as they grow up. But this is the responsibility for children, is to obey their parents. And the joy from children obeying the parents derives from this lordship of Christ and from ultimate submission to him. And so, but not only do children have a responsibility in this, but in 3:21 it says, fathers, do not provoke your children lest they become discouraged. And even though this verse doesn't mention mother, right? The mother's significance is not minimized here, one commentary said. It says this verse is inclusive and it's meant to address fathers and mothers. So we all have a responsibility here not to provoke our children. So the home was designed by God to cultivate hearts that love Jesus. And it's one of my favorite things in the world. I did not have a very happy home growing up. Like, it was not like a safe place. For me or my brother, it was not like a place of happiness, and it was not a place where, despite my mother's best efforts, where there was a lot of celebration of Jesus' love all the time. And so it is one of my greatest, one of the happiest things of motherhood for me, is that I can come home, and not as much so in the new house, but in the old house, I could see through the windows. And I could see, like, laughter. And I could see, like, Jim jumping on the couch or, like, you know, my kids playing or something like that. And I love to pause and reflect and think, like, this is, like, a happy home where it's, like, a safe place to come. And my kids want to come, and I don't take that for granted. And so that's the way the home was designed to be, but not just for fun, right? But in a home that honors Christ, parents have a responsibility to do three things: disciple, discipline, and not discourage. And those are the importance of all three things are important, right? We have to disciple our kids, have to discipline our kids, and we should not discourage our kids also. So as parents, we have to be patient and compassionate toward our children. I wrote this down from a commentary. It said, we must be parents that are patient and compassionate towards our children, not shackling them with guilt and shame, but encouraging them with kindness and mercy and understanding. This promotes a healthy relationship between parents and children that is characterized by love and appreciation. And so we have a responsibility as parents, of course, as well. And then in 22, kind of through 4:1, is where we see these verses about laboring for our master. It says, bond servants, obey in everything those who are your earthly masters, not by way of eye service as people pleasers, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ. For the wrongdoer will be paid back in the wrong he has done, and there is no partiality. Masters, treat your bondservants justly and fairly, knowing that you have a master in heaven. So again, I don't think I have to tell you guys, Paul is not advocating for slavery here, but he is giving some instructions for those who find themselves in these kind of situations. There were bondservants back then, and there were slaves. And so Paul is trying to point these people in a direction to kind of change their perspective and remind them that they can work as unto the Lord instead of unto men. And so I think for us, what we can kind of take from this is that regardless of our circumstances, everything that we do, whether it's in our homes or in our places of work or in our churches, we can work for the honor of the Lord as we kind of labor, as we labor for him. And then in this kind of second part, I know we're like running out of time, we're like 7 minutes, but in this kind of second part, the first part of the passage that we talked about tonight, we were building a home according according to God's plan. And then the second verse 2-6 of chapter 4 kind of transitions to kind of our witness and what our witness looks like. And so just a couple of quick things here. Verse 2-6 says, continue steadfastly in prayer, being watchful in it with thanksgiving. At the same time, pray also for us that God may open a door, may open to us a door for the word, to declare the mystery of Christ, on account of which I am in prison, that I may make it clear, which is how I ought to speak. Walk in wisdom towards outsiders, making the best use of your time. Let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how you ought to answer each person. And so kind of two segments in these four verses here, devoting ourselves to prayer, which Paul has kind of talked about before. He's talked about the importance of prayer, right, and reminded us of that, and reminded these Colossians of that too. But then also acting wisely towards outsiders, which obviously the Colossians were going to encounter a bunch of, right? A bunch of people who were not like them and not like them in their new beliefs. And so Paul challenges the Colossians here in verse 2 to devote themselves to persistent and ongoing prayer, and not only continuing in that prayer steadfastly, but being watchful in it with thanksgiving, which Paul also mentions a lot, like being thankful, right, and remembering to be thankful. And so our devotion to prayer should be done with thanksgiving, which flows from hearts who have been rescued and redeemed. And God has kind of established prayer as this necessary means in which he uses to work in and through us, right? He can change our hearts through prayer. We talked about this a little bit in Sunday school on Sunday, about how we can ask God to do big things. You know, in the Old Testament, God literally one day like made the sun and the moon stand still so that the Israelite armies would prevail over these five armies they were fighting, right? And I told my girls, I said, y'all can pray big prayers, because that's where God does work, you know? And I said, he won't always answer those prayers, of course. But I said, the same God that you're praying to is the same God that literally made time stand still, right? Oh my gosh, that's so cool. And so God has established prayer as the way he works in and through us and through our lives. And so we have to devote ourselves to that prayer. But then also, finally, we have to pray for wisdom in opportunities. He says, walk in wisdom towards outsiders. Let your speech be gracious. And so Paul admonishes us in the Colossians in these verses to be wise in our speech, right? And wise in our surroundings, which is such a pertinent thing for us now. And so he reminds us to keep our speech gracious. And man, I'm just now realizing like that's so beautifully coupled with everything in the beginning part of this, right? Because a lot of our issues in our homes come from the words that we say, right? And so keep our speech gracious and seasoned with salt, because our words are part of our witness. And so we have to be diligent. And so there's a lot in these verses, and we just really just skimmed the top of it. But yielding to the lordship of Christ in all things is seen throughout all of these, and in our roles at home, our roles at work, in our speech, just remembering constantly Christ's lordship and his redemption over us. And I think if we were to keep that reality forefront of our mind, that would transform a lot in our lives and in the lives of our those in our household. So, yeah, so I learned a lot in reflecting over these verses this week, and I hope y'all did too. So anything else before we close out the night? We have like 2 weeks left, which is crazy. We are not meeting next week. I was telling, was it you that I was telling downstairs? I was like, I was trying to teach this class, and it was just like, gotta go out of town for work a lot. So, but it worked out well, because we have, after next week, we have two more nights of training you, and so we'll finish up perfectly. So we got one more week in Colossians, and then we'll do 1 week where we're all Philemon, and then the May 7th will be our last training you class for the semester. But anything else at all?
He says to make your words gracious.
Mm.
It's just important that you have words that you communicate.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
To your children, tell them why they can't do that.
That's right. That's yeah. right.
And I have a godly father, but it was his way or the highway.
Yeah, I said that. Yeah.
But he didn't communicate that to me.
Yeah.
And I didn't see that
yeah.
until I was way older.
Yeah.
Than a teenager or whatever. So communicate.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important.
Yeah, it is. With all the people. I agree. Thank you.